Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. My name is Peter Rauchy. I'm an outreach and recruitment specialist based in New York City, the New York offices of IIE. I'm joined today by my colleague, Michelle Belucci.
Hi, I'm Michelle Belucci, and I'm based in the Washington, D.C. office of IIE.
We have just launched our catalog of awards for the 2019-2020 Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program, and we're delighted to present this this webinar for you today to go through some information about the Fulbright Program in general and also dig into some highlights and new things in the catalog across all the regions. So we're very excited to have you today join us. We've gotten a lot of questions, and we hope that our webinar will cover much of the questions that have already been chatted in, but we want to save lots of time for Q&A, so we're going to dive right into the presentation. So on this slide, we have some great visuals of the breadth of the Fulbright program. Here we have a grantee in what was then known as Burma in the 60s. On the left, the black and white photo, and then on the right, the color photo is a Fulbright Arctic Scholar in 2016. So really, the Fulbright program has stood the test of time. Established in 1946, the program really is designed to help build connections and mutual understanding between people of the United States and citizens of the rest of the world. We at IIE CIES are delighted and honored to assist in the administration of the Fulbright program, which is sponsored by the U.S. Department of State, the Educational and Cultural Affairs Division of the U.S. Department of State. Now, this slide, I like to introduce the webinars with this slide, A, because it's interesting historically, the sort of foundation of the Fulbright program, but also it connects to what makes a successful application. The DNA of the Fulbright program is mutual understanding. So applicants who contextualize their projects, who are able to give nod to their proposals to the sense of this person-to-person diplomacy, when you're able to speak of the potential good impact of the work that you're proposing to do, that makes a strong application. That is tied to the vision for what the Fulbright program is. So it's important to know about the founding of the Fulbright program, just for the historical piece, but also to connect to how you can make a strong application and how you can frame the work you hope to do in a way that is consistent and congruent with the idea of Fulbright. That is a good thing for you to be representing the United States in another country doing the activity that you're doing. So on this next slide, we'll get into some more sort of foundational information about the Fulbright program. As a Fulbrighter, you are in good company. So there have been 380,000 plus Fulbright awards since the inception of the program. We have about 800 U.S. scholar grants granted every year. There are throughout the course of throughout all the Fulbright umbrella of programs, there are 160 participant countries, and then Fulbrighters have gone on to be heads of state, Nobel laureates, Pulitzer Prize recipients, MacArthur Fellows. They've received presidential medals of freedom. Again, as a Fulbrighter, you are in great company. And this slide is not meant to intimidate you. It's meant to inspire you. You know, these Fulbrighters go on to do great things or come into the program from doing great things. And really, this program does support you to do great things. You just have to understand that context of that ambassadorial, that person-to-person diplomacy context. It's an incredible program, not just for the work that each individual grant accomplishes, but also for the scope and the vision of the program. So let's talk a little bit about the core, what we refer to as the core Fulbright program. So the core Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program, these grants support either just pure teaching, just pure research, or a combination of teaching and research. And grants can be anywhere from 3 to 12 months. For the U.S. Scholar Program, there are grants available in about 125 countries. Now, the previous slide I talked about 160 programs. That refers to the breadth of all of the Fulbright programs. Specifically for the U.S. Scholar Program, there are 125 active countries. These grants typically are for faculty, they're for administrators, but they're also for professionals. So people outside of academia, practitioners. So every award will have its own parameter, and as we dig deep into the different regions and the different awards, we'll discuss that. But what's important to know is that there's a Fulbright for almost anyone. it may not be anywhere in the world. You do have to be aware of what the country awards are looking for or what each specific award, what their parameters are. But, you know, if you're fitting into this profile as a faculty, an administrator, or a professional outside of academia, and you're interested in a Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program award, we can talk to you about that and help you find the right award. In fact, we'll unpack how to approach the huge, vast catalog later on in the presentation. But keep in mind, you know, this is what the profile is for the U.S. Scholar Program. If you are pre-doctoral, you may be interested in a U.S. student grant. But as you'll see, as we discuss the different awards available, having a doctoral degree is not a requirement for applying to the U.S. Scholar Program. For the U.S. student program, though, you cannot have a doctoral degree conferred. So you can be anywhere between your BA and a PhD. But let's talk more about the U.S. Scholar Program. So this program is open to all disciplines aggregately. Not every award will be open to all disciplines, but throughout the catalog of awards, all academic disciplines are represented. You must apply to a specific award with a proposed project, and it's very important to unpack the award descriptions and make sure that you understand the parameters of the award and put forth a proposal that is congruent with those parameters. The application deadline is August 1st, and essentially the affiliation can be in a variety of host institutions. Depending on the award, you affiliate with a university or a research institute, a think tank, a museum, a cultural institute. Some awards may have some requirements for the type of institution, and some may even specify a particular institution. Every award does have its priorities and parameters, but across the breadth of the catalog, we're looking at a wide variety of institutions. Now, on this next slide, we'll talk about eligibility for the U.S. Scholar Program. For the U.S. Scholar Program, you must be a U.S. citizen. If you are not a U.S. citizen, there is the Visiting Scholar Program and the Visiting Student Program that is open to other citizenships, people from other countries to come to the United States on a Fulbright grant. But when we talk about the U.S. Scholar Program, we're referring to opportunities for U.S. citizens to go to other countries on a Fulbright grant. So, each award has its own parameters, including the profile of the applicant. So some awards do require a PhD or doctoral degree or other terminal degree in the discipline, but many awards are open to applicants with a master's degree, with professional experience, with academic experience, with experience in the arts. So again, it's really about casting a wide search and then looking at different kinds of awards, then narrowing down to the specific award that fits with what you hope to accomplish. There are awards certainly open to professionals, artists outside of academia, and we'll show you, a wide variety of awards across the catalog as we go deeper into the presentation. As we discussed, though, the sort of typical awards tend to support either research or teaching or a combination of teaching and research. For teaching awards, basic eligibility, you do want to have teaching experience that is required by the award. And in the award description, they'll express things like, we want someone with 3 years of teaching experience, for example, for one award. But then you'll see another award that wants 5 years of teaching experience or 1 year of teaching experience. So it's important to pay attention to the details of each award as you unpack it and go through the requirements. But these are some baseline eligibility criteria. Now, there are new policies on previous Fulbright Scholar grants and waiting periods between grants. There is not a cap on the number of Fulbright grants you can have in your lifetime. So you can apply and enjoy as many Fulbright grants as you are eligible to apply to. There is a waiting period, though, between Scholar grants. So you must wait 2 years between the end of one U.S. Scholar grant before you can apply to another U.S. Scholar grant. So let's move on to thinking about how to select the right award. Now, there are about 470 different awards in the catalog all throughout the world, all throughout the participating countries, and it's quite common to come, people come to the catalog awards in many different approaches, but it's common to come from it either you know the country that you want to go to, or you have an idea for a project, you're not really sure where you want to go, but you want to explore the different kinds of countries that you may be able to accomplish this project in. You really want to think about what is your expertise, what is your experience, what is your background, and how does it fit into the parameters of the award. You want to understand, how your experience in the region and your language ability make you eligible or maybe not as ideal for a specific award or not. And there are insights about these kinds of things in the awards. You also want to think about the relevance of the project to the country. How will the host country benefit from your project? And really, this can tie into that ambassadorial person-to-person diplomacy consideration. And, if you're proposing something that the country either can't accommodate or really isn't relevant to what they hope to accomplish, that is not as strong a proposal as something that's more in line with something that can easily show impact in that particular country. The other consideration is to think about your career level. There are awards available to folks who are early in their careers. There are postdoc awards. There are mid-level awards, all the way up to distinguished chair awards. So really, again, there's a wide range of profiles. You just want to make sure that the profile of the award that you're applying to fits in with the profile that you're putting forward. That's your profile. So these are some really general considerations. What we want to do now, Michelle and I, is sort of unpack some highlights and new awards in the different regions. Keep in mind, though, that the catalog is much, much more vast than what we'll present today. We're just presenting some highlights. But with that, I'll let Michelle talk about Europe and Eurasia.
Thank you, Peter. So as many of you know, the new competition launched last week. So March 1st, we opened the new competition for the academic year 2019 and 20. And I'm going to be going over a little bit about Europe right now. So of the over 460 awards that are offered in the catalog this year, more than half of them are located in the Europe-Eurasia region. So there's about 269 award offerings. Just to consider a few things when you apply to an award in Europe, there are some special features to some of the awards. For example, if you're a grantee to Norway, they arrange a group seminar for all the U.S. scholars in a ski resort. So that's always something nice, one of the perks to that. Some awards offer travel grants to grantees once they're in country so they can do regional travel. If you're a grantee to Germany and some other select countries in Europe, you are invited to participate in the Berlin seminar, which is held annually in March. Assuming that aligns with your grant dates. So there they have exhibits and work and different things displayed on by different scholars throughout the region, as well as conferences and discussions about relevant things that our scholars are doing out in those in their field. So it's a wonderful opportunity to participate in that. So you can find more of this information when you go on the regional webpage, and you'll see the icon here featured that we've got. So, the Europe-Eurasia region is vast, spanning from Iceland to Azerbaijan. So there's a lot of opportunities to check out. And I'm going to now discuss the new awards. Keep in mind, some of these might be at universities that we had featured last year, but it's a new discipline or new researcher or teaching award. So starting off, we have the award to Albania. It's the Interfaith Religious Communication Award, and this opportunity allows scholars to teach, research, or do both in the field of communication, religious studies, or American studies. And the teaching would be at the undergraduate or graduate level, and a PhD is not required for this award. So if you're interested in that, that new award to Albania, you can check that out, 9119AL. Moving over to the United Kingdom, we have a new award that's exciting. It's for cancer research, and this requires a PhD. The grant length is 3 to 12 months, so check on the award for more details about that. And you can be located at any particular accredited institution in the UK. So that's one of the few non-partner awards. The other one is the U.S. Friends of Queen's University of Belfast. It's a visiting professorship for 6 months. So this is a research award. It takes place in Northern Ireland, and it is located at the Queen's University in Belfast. We've got two new awards in Spain, and they're both located at the Universidad in Murcia, the Universidad de Murcia. The first one is the Computer Science Award, and this is for teaching and research. There's one grant available, and that grant length is 2 to 3 months. The other one is medicine, and that one's also a teaching research grant, one grant available, and you would be teaching at the postgraduate level at the master's, in the master's program of public health, and they invite you to conduct seminars and conduct research and collaborate with the faculty there as well. Let's see, what have we got now? In Italy, the Fulbright Lectureship in Sustainability and Circular Economy at the University of Bologna. That's a 6-month grant for teaching and research in economics and environmental sciences. And this award is open to all level of scholars. We have a teaching grant at the University of Milan, the Lectureship in International Politics. This is a 4-month teaching grant. It's open to all levels of scholars, including early career. And the disciplines, the preferred disciplines, are listed on the award, international politics and some of the specializations such as Cold War history, the history of Euro-American relations, U.S. foreign policy, transnational organizations, etc. So if you'd like to learn more about that award, please check that out. Another one at the University of Bologna is the Lectureship in Law and Economics. And so this is a 6-month grant for teaching. And they're interested in big data and financial markets in the EU and the US and looking at risks and opportunities for financial inclusion. And finally, the last award in Bologna is, again, 6 months. It's teaching and research. It looks like we've already discussed that one. All right. Moving right along to the highlights. So these are just the new awards I wanted to point out. In addition to these, we have some awards that we'd like to highlight. These were also available last year, but we always like to give a little information about them. So in the UK, we have the University of Manchester Distinguished Chair. So this is for teaching and research at the University of Manchester's Faculty of Humanities. And so as a distinguished chair, scholars are usually invited to hold seminars or workshops and kind of collaborate at a higher level with the scholars and faculty at the department. And then we have the Arts Award at the Glasgow School of Art, and this is specifically geared toward scholars in architecture, contemporary art, design, and digital visualization. It's open to professionals as well, and a PhD is not required. Let's see, and we've also got the Fulbright Cybersecurity Award. It's not listed here, but that is something that I'd like to highlight for academics or professionals, and so you can check that out as well. Moving on to Belgium, this is a unique opportunity for in NATO security studies. A PhD is required, and the grant length is 1 semester, so 5 months, to research or teach in transatlantic security studies at the College of Europe in Belgium. And you can be affiliated as well with the German Marshall Fund in Brussels. And this is also open to early career scholars. So the NATO award gives you unprecedented access to all of the institutions there, and they have a wonderful commission in Belgium that takes care of our grantees who are placed there, so I definitely encourage those of you who are interested to check that award out. In France, we have the Distinguished Chair, the Fulbright-Tocqueville Distinguished Chair Award. This is a wonderful opportunity. It's a 6-month grant, and grantees are invited as guest teachers and researchers at a French host in a university, and you can also interact with doctoral students and advise them. So it's a wonderful opportunity. It's a distinguished chair, so it's a higher level kind of collaboration. So that is a wonderful opportunity in France that we wanted to highlight, as well as a mid-career option in Finland. And again, this is a professional development opportunity. So it's unique in that it's not meant for the scholar to conduct academic research. It's intended really to develop you as a professional. So what courses and things would you like to learn and kind of build in your profile? So this is geared towards early career as well, but we call it the mid-career professional development. And there's up to 4 grants for this. A PhD is not required, and the applicant should create a project that would include studies or practical experience in actual operations and visits to organizations in the applicant's professional field. So this is a wonderful opportunity in Finland. They've got a wonderful commission there that assists grantees once they're there in country. So definitely something to check out. Peter, I'm passing it back to you now.
Okay, great. I'm going to talk a little bit about some opportunities in the Middle East and North Africa. So a quick overview of the region. There are 29 grant opportunities. There's some in-country support that are features of Middle East and North Africa awards, including dependent tuition reimbursement. So every award will have different levels of support, but this is a feature of many awards in the Middle East and North Africa. So if you're bringing your children, there is the possibility of receiving tuition reimbursement for them. Open-minded adventurous scholars will find great placements in the MENA region. And let's dig into some new awards. So the first award I want to point out is a joint Morocco-Spain Teaching Research Award. So the majority of the catalog of awards is one country. So you are applying to one country, but there are some awards that feature multiple countries, and this is one of them. This award is sponsored by the Fulbright Commissions in both Madrid and Rabat, and scholars can teach, conduct research, or pursue a combination of these activities at Spanish and Moroccan academic and research institutions. Projects that are comparative in nature and address issues linking Spain and Morocco are encouraged for this. So if that's an interest to you, that's really, that's a great project, and it has a different kind of profile than many of the other awards in the catalog. Another new award with Israel, Fulbright Israel Institute Postdoctoral Research Fellowship. So the Fulbright Commission in Israel will fund one postdoctoral scholar, someone seeking to pursue research at an Israeli institution of higher education in the field of Israeli studies. The grant will support programs of work in Israel for up to 20 months, so 2 academic years, and candidates should be interested in pursuing a career in Israeli studies in the United States following their postdoctoral work. There's an all disciplines postdoc for those outside of Israeli studies, but again, these 2 new awards in the Middle East, North Africa, they really highlight some kinds of, these awards have somewhat of a different profile than other awards you may find in the catalog, but they are exciting opportunities for folks that are proposing, congruent projects and that fit into the parameters of these awards. These are really, really exciting opportunities. Let's look at some highlights, though, in the region. So there's an all-disciplines award in Jordan, an exciting new discipline focus also in Jordan in migration studies. So the commission is interested in focusing on refugee populations, and they can also teach at local universities. An exciting development is in Egypt, we are reopening the Fulbright Scholar Program for the first time since 2012. There are a wide variety of opportunities, including all disciplines, visual, performing arts, business administration, postdoctoral awards. Very exciting to have a scholar award back in Egypt for the first time in, 6 years. Then there are expanded approved list of host institutions in the West Bank, including cities such as Jenin, Hebron, Tul Karem. Really, this is an interesting development, and we hope to receive applications from folks that are interested in the West Bank and proposing great projects. But these are some highlights for the region. So as we'll move quickly to Sub-Saharan Africa to also talk about the region and some highlights. So in Sub-Saharan Africa, there are over 50 opportunities to teach and research in 27 countries. Emphasis on teaching in the awards, that's a feature of many of the awards, a teaching emphasis. you can expect to find throughout many of the awards travel for up to two dependents, research allowance, and book allowance. You know, adaptable, creative problem solvers will find lots of different opportunities in sub-Saharan Africa. And, you know, it's just very demonstrative of the fact that the awards are so, they vary so greatly that, you know, we're able to, in some regions or in some countries or for some awards, offer different kinds of additional support. So it's wonderful to see dependent support, research allowance, and things of that nature. And that's a feature in many sub-Saharan African awards. Let's look at what's new in the region, though. So I want to talk about the Botswana Applied Science Award. Here, a scholar is leading a research team in developing either cancer biomarkers or catalysts to convert syngas to fuels. You'll be expected in this award to have a biochemistry background with an expertise using mass spectrometry to identify biological molecules associated with different forms of cancer. Another opportunity under this Applied Science Award is you could work on a project involving heterogeneous catalysis with experience in developing catalytic reactions with syngas to produce fuels. So this is a very applied STEM award in Botswana, an exciting opportunity for folks from that discipline. There's also a Cybersecurity and Digital Forensic Award in Botswana where you would be expected to teach undergraduate courses in either cybersecurity or digital forensics or both. The emphasis, again, with this award is also practical hands-on experience, but this is from the teaching side. You'd be expected to co-supervise postgraduate students, and during your stay, you'd also deliver a training in cybersecurity and or digital forensics for the faculty. So the two exciting new awards for Botswana. Now let's look at Mauritius. There's a Teaching and Research in Intellectual Property Award where you'd be really focusing on teaching undergraduate and graduate courses in IP at a host institution in Mauritius. You'll be running seminars and doing research on the project, and you should be prepared to run seminars outside of the host institution as well for that award. So let's look at some, those are some new awards in Sub-Saharan Africa. Let's look at some highlights. So there are opportunities across a wide spectrum of disciplines. Let's look at some business, economics, and entrepreneurship opportunities. In Cote d'Ivoire, there's an economics and finance award. In Botswana, we have a business administration award. Rwanda, there's a commerce, business administration, economics, and finance award. Really, people from that discipline, you may want to explore the catalog and look at these awards because they do offer opportunities in that discipline. Many of our awards in the catalog are open to what we refer to as all disciplines, but many awards have a specific focus on particular disciplines. In education, we have opportunities with the Democratic Republic of Congo, focusing on social work and development or civic education. In Ethiopia, there's an all-disciplines award, as well as in Cameroon, there's an all-disciplines award, but there is a preference or an emphasis on education in those all-disciplines awards. Keep in mind that some all-disciplines awards, even though they are open to all disciplines, do have preferences or emphases. In environmental science, we have opportunities in Botswana. We have an opportunity in Mauritius for renewable energy and sustainable development. And in Mozambique, there's a sort of environmental studies and sciences opportunity as well. It's another exciting topic. Medical sciences, public and global health. So I want to pause right here and talk a little bit about that discipline. You cannot practice medicine on a Fulbright, but certainly there are awards open to folks who come from a medical background. And we can see that very clearly here in the awards highlighted. There's a public health award in Botswana. There's a medical sciences award in Mozambique. And there's a midwifery education award in Zimbabwe. So really a wide range of medical and public health type awards available in the continent. Let's look at poli-sci. There are all disciplines awards in Cameroon and Guinea focused on poli-sci. And again, while they are all disciplines awards, they have the preference or the emphasis on political science. And then general STEM, there are all disciplines awards in Namibia and Tanzania that have a preference for or an emphasis in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. So with that, we'll move on to the next region, East Asia Pacific, and Michelle will talk about some highlights there.
Thanks, Peter. All right, so moving right along, East Asian Pacific, again, a very vast region. There's over 50 award offerings and close to about 150 grants. So keep in mind, that means one award might have multiple grants where they might have funding for up to three scholars to go on a grant. So I just want to point out that there's a travel grant that's available. If you are selected as a grantee to East Asia Pacific, we have a grant available for up to 2 weeks for regional travel. So let's say if you're a scholar based in the Philippines and you wanted to travel to Australia and give a seminar or hold a workshop, and you wanted the funding for that, and you could apply for that once you're in country. So that's a wonderful opportunity. You can check that out on the regional page. You can see the icon here. And now I'll move on to the new awards. Both of them actually are in Australia. So what we have here is the Professional Scholarships in Australia, the United States Alliance Studies. So this award is a unique opportunity. It's for PhD is required. It's a 3 to 4 month grant. And it's there to advance scholarship in the field of strategic studies, technology, and innovation, and really to promote collaboration, research collaboration between American and Australian scholars at the institutions that host them. So this is a wonderful feature for Australia and United States collaboration. The other one is the Senior Award at Queensland University. And this one seeks a associate or full professor, PhDs required, and again, 3 to 4 months in grant length. It's focused on engaging in social innovation, and a letter of invitation for this award is required from a contact at Queensland University. If we move on into the highlights in the region, I'd like to point out a couple of awards in Taiwan. The first one is a postdoc award. That's the Arts, Education, Humanities, Professional Fields, and Social Sciences Research Award. So it has a long title, but there's up to 6 grants for this postdoc. And if you're conducting research on this grant, it would be helpful to have Mandarin language fluency. So you would need to provide proof of that in the language proficiency report. And so if you'd like to have more information on that, you can find that under Taiwan. The other one is open to academics and professionals. If you're not a postdoc level, this would be the better fit for you. It's open to professionals, and they're open to artists as well. So this is a great opportunity to explore Taiwan in the fields listed there. The other awards we have that I'd like to highlight are in the Philippines. Another kind of collaborative one, which is the U.S.-Philippines Relations Research Award. There's up to 5 grants for this award, so wonderful opportunities for scholars who are not necessarily specialists in the Philippines. So they're looking for disciplines of history, education, or economics, specifically focusing on democracy, diplomacy, and international relations. This award does not require a PhD or terminal degree, so that's great news. The other one is the All Disciplines Award. Again, up to 5 grants available here. The preference for this award are business, STEM, and social science disciplines. And in terms of location, preference is given to scholars who identify host institutions outside of Metro Manila. So kind of going out to the smaller cities and areas that don't typically get Fulbright scholars. Okay. Moving right along to the South and Central Asia region. Lots of exciting news here, especially because I look after this region, so I'm a little partial. So if you're interested in any of the awards here, you'd be reaching out to me. So there are about 20 awards available in this region. The commission in New Delhi in India is the largest commission in the region, and so they do hold an annual Fulbright conference, and usually it's in February or March, held in India, and that is something that is open to grantees in the region. We have a special fund for that as well that grantees can apply for, and we also have the short-term regional travel grant, as I mentioned, that we had available in East Asia. So there's lots of great things to check out. Going straight to the highlights, the award to India known as the Fulbright Nehru Academic and Professional Excellence Award is actually the largest award in the catalog, and largest in the sense that it offers up to 45 grants. This means that there are potentially up to 45 scholars that can go every year to India. And it's an all-disciplines grant, so this is something that they are open to all kinds of professionals or academics from different backgrounds. A PhD is not required for this award, and a letter of invitation is optional. If you have identified a potential host or would like to identify a host, you can include that information or reach out to us in getting help with that. But the award to India, the Fulbright Nehru APE, as we call it, the Academic and Professional Excellence Award, is very open, and they are just looking for some talented experts to come to India and explore the huge country that India is. Moving on to the Maldives, this is kind of sometimes forgotten, but it's a wonderful opportunity to be a scholar in a country that is relatively new to democracy. It's also probably one of the most beautiful countries in South Asia in terms of the beach and all the landscape, if you're interested in that. And the university in Malé is relatively new. It was inaugurated in 2011. The Maldives is also one of the smallest countries in terms of population and geographically in the region. So it's an interesting opportunity for scholars to explore. And the preferred disciplines for that are business administration, economics, education, environmental sciences, journalism, law, medical sciences, political sciences, and religious studies. And then we have an interesting award. It's a multi-country opportunity for scholars who are interested or their research requires being placed in 2 to 3 countries within South and Central Asia. So, for example, if you have a project that requires you to conduct research in Nepal, in India, and in Pakistan, for example, you can propose for the, apply to the South and Central Asia Regional Research Program. So that's a wonderful opportunity, and a PhD is not required for that. The award to Kazakhstan is all disciplines, and there's up to 5 grants for this. A PhD is required, but a letter of invitation is optional. And this award is open to early career scholars and qualified professionals. If you go for the teaching option, they request that you have at least 3 years of teaching experience. The grant length is either 1 semester or 2 semesters, so that equals 5 or 10 months. And there is a flex option available. So the flex option allows you to travel to the country during at least 2 segments over 2 academic years. So if you need to break that up, that's available as well. The other things that I wanted to point out that are available, the other opportunities that are available for grantees once they're selected to a country in South and Central Asia is the regional travel grant. So this is a short-term grant available. As I mentioned in the previous example, if you're based in one country, that's your host institution, your home, where you're conducting the majority of your grant, but you'd like to travel within the region and host a workshop or lecture or things like that, you can apply for the grant, which would fund you up to 2 weeks to do so. And as I mentioned, the mid-year conference in India, available to all grantees in the region. It's a wonderful opportunity to meet and network with grantees who are, placed in the region, students as well, scholars and professionals. So it's a wonderful way to network and really feel part of the Fulbright family, the Fulbright community. All right, Peter, back to you.
Thank you, Michelle. I want to move on to the Western Hemisphere. The Western Hemisphere spans from Canada to Chile and everything in between, Mexico, Central America, the Caribbean, and the entirety of South America. There are 54 awards offered in the Western Hemisphere with many, many grant opportunities. And this is another thing to keep in mind. When we say award, that means a specific award, but there are several opportunities for many awards. Some awards offer multiple grants. So that's the difference between an award and a grant. The award is the actual listing in our catalog. The grant is an instance of that. So some awards are able to support more than one grantee, and we talked about, Michelle talked about India having so many grantees available under that All Disciplines Award. There are All Disciplines Awards in over 20 countries throughout the Western Hemisphere. There's a wide variety of awards, and that also includes Research Chair Awards in Canada, Brazil, and Colombia. Similar to South and Central Asia, there is a regional travel program for grantees in the Western Hemisphere to conduct short-term travel for things like seminars and things of that nature, you know, within the region. So let's get into some of the new awards in the Western Hemisphere. The first award I want to point out is an award, The first award I want to point out is a postdoctoral award in Brazil in natural sciences. So there was a postdoctoral award in Brazil last year, but it didn't have a natural science focus. This year there is a natural science focus. So this is appropriate for applicants who are, you know, recently conferred have recently received a doctoral degree, and they're focusing in the natural sciences. So as we can see, you know, this award evolved into something that was a little bit more open last year and has a different focus now. A completely brand new award in Brazil is a distinguished chair at Fundagi, the Fundação Joaquim Nabuco in Pernambuco. In Brazil, you would affiliate with the EIPP, the Escola de, it's escaping me now, but this is an award where you're focusing on your place in a particular school in the Fundação Joaquim Nabuco, and that's your placement. And as we can see throughout the catalog, some awards are open-ended, and you are proposing a specific placement. Other awards are open to, you're applying to a very particular institution. And we'll talk a little bit about getting through to considerations around letters of invitation, but some awards require them, some prefer them, some don't want you to reach out for letters of invitation, but as you can see throughout the breadth of the catalog, you are, there's a variety of approaches, there's a variety of considerations, and with this specific award, the Fundagi Award in Brazil, you would be affiliating with a particular institution in a particular part of Brazil. Similarly, a new award in Canada are the Distinguished Chair Awards at Carleton University. So Fulbright Canada and Carleton University have established dedicated research chairs. There are four opportunities under this award. One is a chair in arts and social sciences in Canada and North America. Another is a chair award focused on entrepreneurship. Another is a chair award focused on environmental science, and the fourth chair is focused on public affairs in North America. So these would all be affiliated with Carleton University in Canada. So these are three exciting opportunities in the Western Hemisphere, but let's look at some highlights. In Mexico, we have a really special program, the Border Program. So you are actually, have to be affiliated with an institution that is on a U.S. state that borders Mexico, and you travel over the border back and forth, and you have to affiliate with an institution in a border state in Mexico. That's a very unique award where you're not necessarily living for the extent of your grant in the institution in Mexico. We have a TEFL program that's focused on teaching English as a foreign language in Mexico. So many folks with a linguistics background, with an English ESL background, that might be an award that you're interested in. And then we have a U.S. studies chair, essentially teaching U.S. studies, American studies in Mexico. So if you come from that background or propose a project that links to that that discipline, that may be an award that you might want to consider applying to. In Chile, we have an Astronomy and Antarctic Studies postdoc award that's really focused on postdocs in these fields, in the STEM fields, that can connect to astronomy or Antarctic studies. It's a really interesting focus. As you may be aware of, there's a Fulbright Arctic program, and this is, you know, the other side of the world in Chile. There's also a Social Sciences, Humanities, and Education Award in Chile. And as you can see, there are sort of all disciplines awards. Then there are very specific awards to one particular discipline. And then there are awards like this award in Chile that span you know, several different preferred disciplines. That is also the case in Argentina. We see the Science and Technology Award in Argentina, as well as the Social Sciences and Humanities Award in Argentina. So again, these awards are focused on, you know, a subset of particular disciplines. They are not all disciplines, but they are sort of open-ended within you know, several preferred disciplines. Canada has many, many awards that are very focused on particular disciplines. There are many research chairs in Canada, and these three opportunities, the research chairs in business and economics, in health and food security, and in North American studies, are just examples of the availability in Canada. Generally, with the research chairs in Canada, there are several grants available for each of these chairs, and you'd be affiliating with specific institutions in Canada for these particular opportunities. We'll have a webinar focused on Canada for those folks who are interested in Canada, you know, later on in the cycle. But the awards in Canada are very specific. They're very great opportunities for people who fit the profile and are from that background to affiliate with Canadian institutions and really contribute and do really great research and teaching.
All right, so that wraps up the new award and highlighted award slides, and we'd like to move on to the application components and kind of discussing how you can apply and the process for, you know, applying to a Fulbright grant. The first thing, of course, is just kind of distinguishing what is available. So we always like to say there's a Fulbright that works for you. The Fulbright program has evolved through the decades to really kind of address the needs of scholars today. And so we have what's called the Flex option. It's available in a lot of the countries where we have our awards, so about 63 countries. And this allows you to conduct research throughout two academic years. So if you're not able to commit to a six-month grant, but you could certainly do 3 months one year and 3 months the other year, you could break it up that way, or 2 and 4 months. So you could find out more about that on our website, and it's clearly listed if the award you're interested has a flex option or not. And then, of course, as Peter mentioned earlier, you know, looking for awards that really speak to where you are in your career. Postdoc awards are usually awards that are for applicants that have completed their PhD within the last 5 years, so you would be considered postdoc. Early career kind of discusses that, but in terms of a professional level, you'd be within your first 5 years of starting your profession. And then the distinguished chair is kind of the higher level, you know, full professor or associate professors that have an extensive publication record. And we also highlighted a couple of multi-country awards, so there are some opportunities to conduct research in a couple of countries within the same region. And if your research is such that you need to actually be in two world regions, we have what's called the Global Scholar Award. So you would need to check out more of that, check out that award in our catalog as well. So that's for 2 to 3 world regions. We also invite applications from independent scholars. So a home university affiliation is not required. So definitely independent and emeriti scholars are welcome, as well as professionals. In terms of the application resources we have online, a lot to go through, but I'm going to try and highlight what all is available. So as you know, there's the catalog of awards. You would find that on our website. Our website is CIES.org. So the Fulbright is not in the name, but it's CIES.org. And then we've got the application instructions in a PDF form and some guidelines and sample project statements for you to look through and checklists for each type of grant. So if you're applying for a teaching grant, you can see the checklist for that, which differs from the checklist for the research grant. We host a lot of webinars up until the August 1st deadline, so even, you know, up until the last couple days before the deadline, we'll be hosting webinars, taking questions, walking applicants through the application page by page. As Peter mentioned, there'll be other Spotlight Awards. He's hosting one on Canada. I'll be hosting one on India. There's a lot of other options available, discipline-related and region-based. So check out our webinar schedule for that. We've got a lot coming up. And then, of course, our blog has some great stories of Fulbrighters who are writing as they are conducting their grant. One way you can connect with us and kind of get the updates and notifications is by logging on to our website and clicking on My Fulbright. So we encourage you to do that, and then that way you can keep up to date with any changes or announcements. In terms of the application, it's fairly straightforward. You go through the Embark system, and the core of the application, of course, is the project statement. So it's a 5-page limit. So within those 5 pages, you've really got to tell us, you know, what you'd like to do in the project, and I'll be going over that in the next slide. We need a shortened curriculum vitae, so again, there's a page limit for that, 6 pages for scholar grants and 8 pages for distinguished chair. We require 3 letters of reference, and then depending on the award, there's different other, you know, different documents that you'd need to supply, such as syllabi if you're doing a teaching award, a bibliography for the research award, and then depending on what the grant outlines, if a language proficiency report is required or a letter of invitation. And then for applicants in the arts, architecture, writing, and journalism disciplines, we would require a little bit of a sample of your portfolio. So as I mentioned, the project statement is really where you want to spend most of your time once you've identified, even if you haven't necessarily identified the location in terms of the host institution, if you kind of have a rough idea of what you'd like to do, to really be as specific as possible in the project statement. Why are you selecting that particular country or that particular institution? So that would kind of feed into the feasibility and suitability of the project and, you know, ultimately the outcome and the kind of multiplier effect that we hope to see. So what are the goals of the research and what methods? Providing as much detail as possible will be to your benefit because the people who are reviewing these applications are your peers. In addition to that, they are, you know, peers from outside of your discipline. So speaking in a language that is accessible, speaking both to your peers in your discipline and to your colleagues outside of your discipline, making it accessible in that sense. Speaking also to the outcomes of the grant. So we're looking to see not only the impact of the host institution where you will be based, but what would happen, you know, once your grant is done and when you come back home to your home institution and to you. So kind of speaking to the multiplier effect, you know, the legacy of your grant. And also addressing your adaptability. A lot of the countries that you may go to or the institutions may not have the same setup that you're familiar with. And just really kind of having, a couple plan B and C kind of options available if your timeline doesn't necessarily work, kind of building that into your project statement and addressing how you would handle a challenging situation. So that's really what we're hoping to see in your project statement. In terms of the letter of invitation or the affiliations to a host, it depends really on the award what all is detailed there. So as I mentioned, there are a lot of partner awards with the UK, and so they already tell you exactly who the host is and where it's located. So for those awards, they may or may not require a letter of invitation. Usually they do, but at least you've already got an idea where the host is, and so you can check out the department, see what faculty are there or who you'd be potentially collaborating with. If a host is not identified, then you have a couple ways to develop relationships. You could speak to your Fulbright liaison on campus. You could reach out to us. Take a look at the Fulbright Scholar Directory. That's a wonderful resource that I'd like to highlight. Let's say you wanted to do an award in Taiwan and you wanted to see who else from perhaps your institution or your discipline has gone to Taiwan, where have they been placed, maybe they could connect you. And also check the award description because oftentimes they will list the link to the Fulbright Commission there, or if there isn't a commission, then they'll suggest various universities that you could reach out to. So there are a lot of resources if you're not sure, you know, how can I, get an affiliation. You know, no fear about that. We can certainly help you with that, and it's always better to provide a letter of invitation when you can. Now, keep in mind, the letter of invitation is non-binding. So, for example, if the University of Manchester has an award that requires a letter of invitation, they might be issuing 10 or 15 or however many letters to people who are applying to the grant. So keep in mind that it might be kind of a standard letter of invitation that they provide you. But more importantly, the letter should indicate who you would be collaborating with, the grant length, and what you propose to do. So that would be one way to get it, is to think of who you would want to reach out to for that letter. And the letter needs to be on the institutional letterhead. In order to submit a competitive application, we do provide a lot of resources online. First and foremost, you should address the Fulbright goal of promoting mutual understanding. Oftentimes, we may forget that, you know, Fulbright's mission is really kind of promoting cultural exchange and understanding across, borders and continents and all of that. So really kind of, you know, why Fulbright? You know, there's lots of other grant opportunities available that are out there, but you selected Fulbright. So maybe kind of, you know, giving us some insight as to why you've selected Fulbright as your chance to go abroad. And why that particular country? We really need to see, you know, a demonstrated need to be placed in the country. If you're working with something that can be, you know, a data set that you can sit in your office wherever you are in the U.S., reviewers might question, well, why does this person need to specifically go to that country? So addressing that and really crafting a project that shows that, you know, indicates that that is needed. And then really finding an award that matches your professional expertise, you know, having that great fit, how you would be a good match to that award or that institution, and what you can really bring to the host. And as I mentioned, mentioning the, you know, the outcomes and things like that, so perhaps future collaborations, or, you know, maybe inviting a scholar from that institution to your campus back home. Those are the kind of things that we're looking for as well, because we do have the Fulbright visiting scholar program, so there's a way that you can get your colleagues from abroad to come and be at your university or placed in the U.S. So those are just some guidelines. We have more details under the review criteria of our website and also the application guidelines, so those are great places to start. Quickly going over the timeline, the deadline this year is August 1st. In September, the discipline committees review the applications. Once the technical review has been done, the discipline committees will review the applications. So if you're in the field of biology, then you'll have your peers reviewing that. And then from September to November, we convene the peer review committees in Washington, D.C., based on region. And so that's a second level of review. So again, they may or may not be in your discipline, so it should speak to, you should be using a language that's accessible to all. That committee will then recommend or not recommend applications for further and final review at the Fulbright commissions or post. And from November to January, the process goes to the Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board. Grantees start to get notified between February and May, and then by May and June, your grant packets are sent out, and some grants start in July, so grantees are then off to their destination. All right, so in order to learn more about this, as I mentioned, you can connect with us at cies2.org. That's the My Fulbright link to register your interest. You can email Peter, or you can email me. Our contacts are there, and our website, as I mentioned, is cies.org. And you certainly can connect with us on social media. We have a huge presence online, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so please check us out there. And I think we have basically come to the full hour, so if you had any questions that we didn't get addressed, we will try and get back to you. We have a record of that. Again, please register yourself at My Fulbright, and if we don't get back to you in time with the questions that you have, you can email us directly. And we just want to thank you for attending. So, Peter, can I pass it over to you?
Yes, thank you. And Michelle, what I'll do, I know that we've reached the full hour, but I'll stay a few minutes afterward to answer some questions. I do see a few, and I've been trying to chat into folks directly to answer their questions, but there are some themes of questions that I think I can get to most of the questions in just a few minutes. So for those of you that have to leave, thank you so much for joining us. I will stay on for a few more minutes for those of you that can stay to answer some of the questions that have come in. We have questions about, I'm not a U.S. citizen. Can I apply to the Scholar Program. You can apply to, as we discussed, the Visiting Scholar Program. So the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program is designed for U.S. citizens to go to other countries on a Fulbright grant. There is the Visiting Scholar Program to bring non-U.S. citizens to the United States on a Fulbright grant. We had a question about the application. Someone logged into Embark and was not clear of what they were seeing. If you are having trouble with the application, let us know. But we're refreshing the application. We've just refreshed the catalog. And the application, we're in the process of refreshing that. We're right at the beginning of our cycle. So, you know, there may be a little bit of a lag. If you are experiencing significant trouble with the application or seeing something that doesn't make sense or you're concerned, let us know. But, you know, we are refreshing the application, so don't really worry about that. We have a question. I'm a Fulbright alum, and I'm interested in a short-term award. Which ones are available? Well, throughout the catalog of awards, there is a variety of awards, anywhere from 3 months to you know, a full calendar year or more. And there are also short-term seminars that are 2 weeks designed for administrators. You can use the search function of the catalog to actually search by the length of awards. You can actually, there's a drop-down menu. You can search for awards that are 3 months or fewer, 5 to 10 months, things of that nature. So you're able to search the catalog and sort of filter the over 460 awards that we have on offer in the catalog. We have another great question. What's the best way to contact a potential host country? So first thing you want to make sure is what is the request in the award? Do they want a letter of invitation? Do they prefer it? Is it optional? Do they absolutely want you not to submit one? Understanding that requirement, it's written into the award description. And then in the cases where an award requires a letter of invitation, it will be written into the award description, some parameters around that. Sometimes we list the Fulbright office or the U.S. Embassy in the country. And in some cases, certainly in the Caribbean, we actually list specific universities sometimes, and even give email addresses for specific contacts at the universities. Of course, if you're ever stuck with finding an invitation, finding someone to approach for a letter of invitation, feel free to contact us, and we can help you find the right resources that can get you along on that. Don't view that as a barrier to an otherwise to a project that you're otherwise excited about. There are resources to help you with that, but it will vary greatly by the country and greatly by the award. I'm just scrolling to see if we have any questions I can answer. So we will be archiving this webinar, so you'll be able to view this webinar again if you had to leave early or if you joined us late, if there's a particular country that you're interested in or a particular award that we covered. We really did take you on a trip around the world with this presentation, and it's a lot of information for an hour. If you want to go back to it, if you want to contact us, you absolutely can. But we will be archiving this webinar. It will be on our website, and you'll be able to see this again if you couldn't see all of it. And another great question. I have interest in policy and trade studies. In the catalog of awards, you can search by the sort of discipline at large, but you can also do a keyword search. So if you have specific interest on specific topics, you can type in, say, dance or, you know, risk or policy studies, think trade, and, you know, you may not come up with an award, but, you know, you may be able to, if you don't see your particular interest in a specific award, you may want to consider an all disciplines award that is open to discipline of your topic. So if you have a focus on risk, you may want to look at things like policy or organizational studies or things of that nature. I'm going to take just a few more questions and scroll through. And again, I want to thank everyone for joining us. If we didn't get to your question, I will actually email you personally just to make sure that I cover everything. But you can also, again, reach out to us if you think of something else or if you didn't get your question answered. We have a question about the final selection, and that's a great, great, great question. How much influence does the host institution have in the process? So on a previous slide, we talked about the review process. keep in mind that there are many, 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 many levels of review in the Scholar application process. The peer review involves review by country or region and by discipline. So you're reviewed by your peers from who are experts in your discipline, but then also by another committee that is an expert in the region. Keep in mind, this, what does this say? You have to write a project that resonates with your discipline, but that can also be read by a generalist. Keep that in mind. So that's the first phase of the review process. Then after that, you go on to the countries, and then finally the J. William Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board. It is a very complicated, very multi-layered, very nuanced process. Some folks make it through peer review and then don't make it through final selection. If you've made it through peer review, that in and of itself is a distinction and you should be proud of yourself. But this is a very, very competitive process, and quite frequently it boils down to just, you know, who else applied. You may have done everything right, but if there are 5 grants available and there are, you know, 10 outstanding candidates, you know, final selection has to make some difficult decisions. I'm just scrolling through to see any less quick questions. All new awards were not mentioned. There's not a way to search the catalog specifically for new awards, but really it's about finding the right award for you. So I wouldn't worry too much if an award is new or not. I think it's more about finding an award that fits the parameters of the project that you hope to accomplish. So really, we like to highlight new awards because they're exciting to us, but there may be tweaks to awards that we didn't mention in this presentation. There may be sort of new institutions that a particular award can accommodate. Every year the catalog does tweak here and there, but it's really more about finding the best fit for your project, the best fit for your profile. We like to present what's new for folks that have applied to other Fulbrights and maybe more aware of the program than folks that are sort of newer to the program, but really it's about finding that best fit. All right, I think I have time for just 2 more questions. Wonderful question. So does Fulbright publish statistics on applications? We do for the U.S. student program. We do not publish statistics for the Fulbright Scholar program. Now, why is that? One thing that you may have noticed as we went through the different awards in the different regions is that each award had a very specific profile. Each award had, there were awards that were fit for folks that were distinguished chairs, meaning folks that are, you know, very far along in their academic careers. There were postdoc awards. There were awards that accommodated teaching, awards that accommodated research, and then the Finland Professional Development Award, you were neither teaching nor conducting research, you were engaged in professional development. So these awards, they're almost like job descriptions. So that sort of renders statistics kind of irrelevant. We encourage folks to apply to the best award for their profile, for their project. Now for the student program, I'll give you a good example though of some of the issues with giving numbers. We do give numbers for the Fulbright U.S. student program. Sometimes though, folks try to play the numbers. They try to game the numbers a little bit to give themselves a better chance of getting selected. And I understand that. Everyone wants to be successful, but authenticity is so much more important. So I'll give you an example. One year there were 5 grants, student grants to Andorra. 8 people applied that year. I mean, those are incredible odds. 8 people applying for 5 awards. The next year, 50 people applied for those same 5 grants in Andorra. So there are sometimes ways to sort of increase your chances of things based on statistics, but for opportunities like the U.S. Scholar Program, where it's almost like each award is like a job description. If there's one grant and we get 20 incongruent applications to that grant, there will be no grants. It really is all about the fit. It's all about finding that right fit. So that's a great question about statistics. I hope you can understand the context and considerations about why we don't publish them for the Scholar program. I just don't think for a program this nuanced, statistics would necessarily be helpful. And I will answer one more quick question, and then for folks whose questions I didn't answer, I will get back to you in the next few days directly.
Peter, maybe we can... Oh, sorry, we can maybe... we're getting a lot of questions about applying for more than one award, if you want to speak to that.
That's, sure. That's a really great question. You can only apply to one award per award cycle. So you should write a project that is specific to the parameters of your particular award. Now, the confusing piece with this is that we do offer a space in the application to indicate other awards that you might wish to be considered for should you not be granted the award that you are applying to. That is exactly that, though. It's an indication, and the only part of your application form that should, even give nod to another award is that one question in the application. That is the only place where you'll indicate. You don't write a proposal for it. You don't, indicate it in your statements anywhere. You can just sort of simply just list other awards that you're interested in applying to. But you must apply to a specific award, and it must connect to the country, to the institution, to the parameters of the award. So really, you can only apply to one award per cycle. Don't get too confused by the ability to list other potential awards in which you're interested in. You really want to put all of your energy, focus, and interest in applying to that specific award. So at this time, we are 15 minutes over the hour. Thank you all for those of you who stayed on extra time. It's a lot of information, and we really appreciate your patience. For those of you who I didn't, who Michelle and I were not able to answer your question, I will get back to you directly. We have your emails. We have your questions. But again, I want to thank everyone for joining us. And I want to thank Michelle, too. She and I really did take you around the world, and I hope you are all excited about applying to the U.S. Fulbright program.